Dang it. What was I saying? The human dongle.
Oh, get your finger out of my eye.
Way better now that you've stopped touching it.
Yes, I was...
Oklahoma, where the wind comes sweeping down the plain, and the waving wheat can sure smell sweet when the wind comes right behind the rain.
Shaboom.
Welcome back to Okla Said. It is the official Okla Ed podcast. Welcome back, listeners. Thank you so much for continuing to listen to Scott and I ramble about all things education.
I don't ramble. I speak with sincere thought.
You do, but I think everybody realizes I ramble now. So
one of us rambles and one of us looks really good.
So you can follow us on the Twitters at Okla Said, or yes, follow Scott personally at Teach From Here.
Right.
And I am at eBarnes73.
Yeah. I really like eBarnes73 as opposed to your eLyn, whatever it was. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I know.
I still think you're trying to be my age with the 73 tag on the end, though.
No, just flip it upside down. eLyn.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Anyway.
Who thinks like that?
Gifted and talented people.
Oh! Hey! Are we having a gifted and talented conversation today?
We're going to have a gifted and talented conversation. We're talking truths and myths truths about gifted and talented.
Yeah. And we released the interview with Chris Vian. Is it Vian Vian? I don't remember.
I don't know.
Yeah, so he
I asked him if he preferred Chris or Christopher, and he didn't care.
That part I caught. So we'll say it's Vian. And Chris, yeah, you feel free to correct us with a phonetic pronunciation on the Twitter. And you can follow him at CVIAN87. And you should probably listen to his interview with Aaron before you listen to this podcast. So we'll pause while you go do that, because he sets a good foundation for coming into this one.
They need to pause.
That's what I'm saying.
You said we'll pause.
Oh, we are right now.
We'll and be here forever.
Now that you're back, okay. Now that you've listened to me.
That was awesome.
Okay.
Well, question one, what does it mean to be gifted and talented? I see I didn't put anything down here.
Yeah. So apparently, Aaron, you had no thought. Here's the deal. I think... I saw a lot of conversation in this where gifted and talented depended on what the skill was that was being sort of examined. And so in general, I could be very gifted with, say, math, but completely on the bottom end of the barrel in reading. So does that make me gifted and talented or not? And I thought that was a conversation thread that I saw all through the chat.
Yeah. Well, I went and found one.
Oh, good.
Because it brings up something that I don't know that we put anywhere in here.
Mm-hmm.
I could be wrong. Anyway, I went with Sean Heim.
Yes.
He said, it's a little embarrassing that our primary method for gifted and talented identification and funding is still based on an IQ test score.
Yeah.
We should study and a more equitable way to fund programs that help enrich their educational experiences.
That's a good tweet. And a little later, I think I have
it. Later.
Yeah. You cut out for just a minute, so I started talking. So sorry.
Go for it.
Well, what I was going to say was that Sherry Gately addresses equitable a little bit later, and I think I picked her tweet for that. But
oh, I did too.
Oh, maybe we picked different tweets the same.
Okay. Anyway.
So I went with Kimberly Blodgett. She's at Kimber Blodgett. She said, I have mixed feelings on what it means to be GT. This is always a tough topic for me. I get it. I do. But I also fear it promotes segregation, and I think it needs to be more diverse. Here's where she's going with that. Are severe and profound learning disabled students are typically educated kind of away from general student population classroom-wise. They're in the same building. They may or may not mix in the halls or whatever, but like when they go for learning, those students typically have their own place. Now, students who are on an IEP for some sort of learning disability are included in the classroom, because that's deemed the best way to educate them, is to include them as part of the learning process. And they may have a thing or two where they kind of go for whatever their weakness is, they may be pulled out into that particular course. So if I have a reading IEP, I may be in all the normal classes, but then have a 30-minute reading focus just on me with a specific teacher.
Right.
Okay. And I think Gifted and Talented is doing the same thing in general, where they are included in a lot of ways, and then they receive pullout that is focused on their gifts.
Exactly. But I'd like to go back to the embarrassing part for just a second. Mm-hmm. With Sean Heim.
Yes.
Do you realize Oklahoma is still following policy, procedure, information that was last updated in 1972?
Is it really? That's their Gifted and Talented stuff?
That's what's on the books. 1972 was when it was placed there. That's really a problem.
I didn't know that. That's fascinating.
Yeah, no, I found that out during the chat. That's a problem.
That's an issue, yeah, for sure.
I wasn't even born. Just, you know, like, hello.
I was in the process of germinating in 1972.
Gross.
What do you? It's part of the birthing process. I was birthed in 73, so I was in germination for parts of 72.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay. But no, I think there's... well, I mean, I would just basically blow up our current situation and just rebuild it from scratch 1,000 times better. I mean, it's going to make people mad, including probably seasoned veteran teachers. But my goodness gracious, can we not do things better?
I mean, seriously. And so this is like, and Chris says it in the interview. You heard him. He was like, it's antiquated. Our methods that we're using are antiquated. I didn't realize how antiquated they were until this. I mean, like, when he said it, I was like, yeah, you're right, all of education is. We get on that soapbox regularly on this podcast,
right?
But 1972, folks,
yeah, we could do with an update. You know, the other thing too that's fascinating to me about all of this is sometimes in having been a part of the AP process, the teaching an AP course, a college board course, and they you have these like summer institutes where they give you these great tools that you can use as part of teaching learning, like these really good teaching methods and these really good activities and these really enriching things that you can do to try and build this whole student up so they can be an excellent disseminator of information on whatever this AP topic is. Funny story, all of those same amazing things that we're really pushing on these super brilliant kids already, honestly, are sound teaching practices that can work wonders with our regular kids.
For all students, right.
but we're saying, and that's kind of what Kim's pointing out. We're like, oh, no, Gifted and Talented, we're going to do these amazing things for you, all kinds of hands-on stuff, all kinds of tinkering stuff, all kinds of, like, really get our fingers dirty stuff. But everybody else, you just go to your lecture.
Yeah.
So. Question two. What resources do I or my school offer to help out gifted students?
This was, I mean, if you look through the tweets for this question, like, it doesn't really seem like there's a whole lot going on.
Mm-hmm.
But in some cases, there's a ton going on.
Right.
It just seems like it's even from school to school, the idea of how it works is not consistent. I went with Janilyn Taylor on this one, and she said one of the biggest resources would be creative, passionate, and motivating teachers who offer various types of learning activities for students. And that's
for all students. Yeah, that's
students.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. I did miss that. And yes, that's exactly what you're saying. So, I mean, I don't know. I guess I would be the gifted and talented instructor if I had gifted and talented kids, because that's the way my school works. But I do teach even my lower kids with hands-on approach, and my high kids with hands-on approach, and I just figure these guys are and, you know, stimulate the mess out of every kid that I've got. So,
I mean, there's something to be said for stimulating those brains, you know? I don't know. I know at Emma Memorial, there wasn't necessarily, that I was aware of, a gifted and talented policy, but we offered a variety of AP courses. So we didn't do the International Baccalaureate, but we offered a variety of AP courses that students who you would traditionally call gifted and talented would have had the opportunity to take, as well as other students. You know, we had students that could take AP, like say AP English, and that would be the only AP course they would take. So they could meet some of those needs specifically. But.
Well, and then like Chris said, the AP should not be used for gifted and talented.
Right. Right. That's what I'm saying. Like, we didn't have a program that I was aware of.
What do you?
Except for that. So.
Okay. That's that. Well, question three.
Hold on.
Go ahead.
Chong C. Lore. He said... He's at Chong 2087. He said, where I am, there's not much resource to go around. Not much resource to go around. All I can do is enrich their lives with my content knowledge and my experience. It's not much, but it's something. And I think that's what all teachers try and do. And yeah. as you grow as a teacher, you develop stronger content knowledge and stronger experience to refer on. But what got me there is there's not much resource to go around. There isn't.
No, and so we had ACEs last week where we're both like, whoa, like we need more resources.
Yeah.
And we're sitting here with GT this week and we're like, oh, we need more resources.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, we're the poorest state in the nation. You know?
I mean, gosh, it's
for education. Anyway.
All right. Question three.
Yeah. How can students on 504s and IEPs really be gifted? Or can they be gifted?
Right.
How so?
So we should just do a really quick explanation of these two terms in case people who are educators are unfamiliar with one or both, or are listeners who aren't in education but are listening because they want to know.
Give it a breakdown.
So an IEP is an individualized education plan, and that is a service that is provided to students who have shown a learning disability through a battery of testing programs that have been pretty well vetted. So if these battery of testing programs detect that you have a disability in some form or fashion, you get an individualized education program that's written just for you, and it's simplified down to an IEP.
Yes.
Is that correct?
That's
how
right.
I would describe it. Okay. A 504 is sort of like a behavior improvement plan, although not necessarily a negative behavior improvement plan, but a plan to help a student who doesn't quite qualify for an IEP have their own specific plan that they can rely on to help them do the best that they can in school. So it's not behavior modification, but it's kind of loosely tied to that.
Yes, there are kids that have 504s and like, I'm just thinking of one kid in particular here in Sapulpa. He has a speaker system that follows him, mm-hmm. and the teacher wears kind of like a bolo.
Mm-hmm.
It's a microphone, and that goes class to class with him,
right.
For his hearing. There are other kids who have 504s because you know, for anxiety, or I mean, I've seen they're not learning impaired needing an education plan, but maybe a smaller group to work with, or you know, some music playing in the background, because mm-hmm. anyway, 504s cover all kinds of things.
They do, and I would give a couple of examples of ones that I was in. One of my students was extremely ADHD. I mean like like, oh my gosh, just share your energy with me, please. I need just a little bit more. But we had to address some ways to help him manage that. And so we used a 504 to help him in the classroom in that way. And then I had a student who had, I'm not going to say this correctly, but is it discography?
Discography.
But it's like, but it's where your handwriting is just so poor that forget it. There's no reading it.
Right.
And both of those kids were super intelligent, super bright kids. But they had some things that we just had to meet outside of the normal, quote unquote, normal student situation.
Right.
So, all right. So, can students on 504s and IEPs really be gifted? Aaron, take it away.
Sherry Gately said IEPs and 504s do not define a student's abilities. They can simply define a set of supports that students need. So, yes, they can absolutely be gifted. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then I picked a second one. I'm sorry.
You didn't put it in the notes.
No. Oh, I was going to pick Greg's.
I picked Craig McVeigh. Well, so Aaron actually only picked one. So Craig McVeigh, he is at McVeigh 51. He said, one of the most gifted students I've ever seen was a blind student who excelled at speech, drama, and debate. Brilliant, but had to work really hard. Exceptional? Yes, in many ways. And that would be a person who would have a 504.
Yes. Yes.
So, question four. Now, I believe you had a couple tweets here because you stuck one off on the side. Holy smokes, did you pick three tweets here?
Yeah.
Good heavens.
I got three tweets.
Aaron, I feel like you've...
The one off to the side in case you wanted to...
You violated Okla said templating norms.
This is a pretty big question, in my opinion.
So, here's the question. Do gifted students actually need to be pulled for specialized classes? Now, I would argue we do this with our learning disabled students when necessary.
Yeah.
So why not support those on the other end as well?
Right.
Okay.
I mean, agreed. So there, I've got three tweets. Okay. I do apologize. I went with Todd Gregg for one of them. He said, I think if there's a purpose and a building and challenging of the processing skills, then yes. If it's not intentional, then no. And I've seen some very unintentional GT pullouts. I mean, they were intentional in who was being pulled out, but as far as what was being done, I was like, man, I had a math lesson and you pulled them out and they could have been here for that.
Right.
I also went with Terry Saul, and Terry is at Saul02_Terry. He said, just been observing Okla Ed, but I have to say, we focus on inclusion of IEP students with no pullouts, but they're in favor for the pullouts for GT-identified students. We get money for both. Can't a great lesson challenge all? Inclusion done right works. And so, you know, I'm building on something here. Intentional. Terry says it can work if you're intentional. Craig McVeigh says, and so he's my third tweet here. He said, pull out, differentiate, challenge, leave in, motivate, stimulate. Isn't that what the teachers do best for gifted and talented kids and special need kids and their kids? Damn, this job is hard.
Oh, dang it. Now I'm going to have to bleep out the potty language.
Well, just add the E, you know.
But yeah, so, I mean, that's interesting, right?
Right. Anyway.
And then people don't...
This thing's hard!
People don't understand that aren't doing this. And I think that's... So I went with Adrian Ford. Now, so Adrian pops in and out of Okla Ed every now and then, but I think this is the first time she's been in chat in quite a while, and she had some great tweets. She is at Mrs. AJ4. She said, yes, because it is too easy for regular ed teachers to focus on the struggling students with the misconception that the gifted students will be successful no matter what. And you know what? That runs a little bit counter to what Aaron was saying, but I think there's a point there as well that the way we've set our education system, unintentionally, some group of kids gets left out because we're trying to teach to this group of kids. Now, yes, depending on where you're at, it could be that we're trying to bring up those low test takers. So all the emphasis goes on students who are right there between the borderline of needs improvement and doing fine. So we focus all our teaching energy on capturing those 17 kids. And we don't necessarily, there's the kids that will never get out of the bottom quartile, just never will. Yeah. They don't get any love. Okay. Sorry. There's the kids who are geniuses. We just go ahead and make the assumption they're going to be geniuses. They're fine. They don't get any love. There's the kids that are already firmly planted in the will pass without any issues. Well, you're already there. So you don't get any love. I mean, so, and that's just like sort of one example. And it generalizes a little bit, but yeah, different groups of kids get our focus. And I think this tweet summed up how I felt in the classroom a lot of times, because I even found myself making the assumption, my Jedi kid over there in the corner, I don't have to worry about.
No, he's gonna be fine.
He's gonna be fine. So guess what? He gets a lesser experience because I don't worry about him.
Right.
And I did that. And I tried not to. So.
Well, so, I mean, I think that is a great question, but it kind of leads us to question five.
Mm-hmm.
Is it okay to move on?
Yes.
Okay. Is it okay?
No. I want to keep talking about question four. The sun is still up. No, I'm kidding.
I'm waiting.
Okay, now that you're back from the interview podcast.
Question five. Is it okay that I don't have small groups with my gifted students? And is it okay that I use them as peer mentors? Ooh, buddy, I have issues with this. Like, I have seen your Jedi kid be asked to help those low quartile kids.
Mm-hmm.
They don't necessarily want to have to do that every time. Like, they get it. So you're going to use them to teach it to other people versus use something else to lift them up more, you know? Mm-hmm. Like you were just saying, like, they've already got it. I'm going to focus over here.
Right. But hey, do my job for me and help that kid.
I know. That's what I'm saying. That kid cannot be shoved to, you know, to help you teach every time. That's all.
I think you make a good point there, because how often do we ask those kids that get it to help us? They're not trained teachers, right?
Right. I like the idea of peer mentors, but I've seen it abused with the higher level kids.
There's a difference in being a peer mentor and me constantly asking Jedi kid to help others that don't understand.
Exactly. Adrian Four said, not if that's their only form of enrichment. They deserve to be mentored to their full potential as well.
Right.
Thank you.
Yeah. Like I said, Adrian showed up and had some excellent tweets.
Yes, now, she did.
Scrolling through chat, John Bennett was, and he came in like 2 hours later with more questions. So,
oh yeah, well, there was a whole conversation between John and Chris and myself and another gal. Like, it went on for like another hour.
He was really chewing on all of this, and I could tell he was just like trying to process everything. Because he. His experience isn't necessarily in public education. He spent a lot of his time in higher ed. So you don't necessarily have a gifted and talented plan for higher ed that I'm aware of.
No, exactly.
And so, you know, here's John's response then. Somehow, and he's at JCBJR. He said, somehow students are identified as gifted and talented. Okay. Isn't it the teacher's responsibility to facilitate their learning and useful use of that knowledge just as for all students? Or... are there special mandates for gifted and talented? And I thought that was an excellent point, which goes back to kind of this running theme of we need to really try and teach all of our students. It's
exactly.
Almost impossible to do because of the broad range of needs.
It's so insane. I mean, it really is so insane. Anyway.
Question six.
Which was not an original question that he had given to me.
So he even said, calling an audible here, because he saw the tone of the conversation. And you know what? I love when an audible is called and we get off script a little bit.
Yep.
A fast side note. I was at a conference, a well-organized, well-run, established conference where you typically found good things. And I was in a session and I found the speaker rather enlightening and was, you know, hanging, you know, getting some great ideas. And somebody from the audience, you know, you always do that, ask any questions anytime, right?
Yeah.
So this person asked a question and the speaker goes, I don't have a slide for that, so I'm not going to address it.
What?
Yeah, yeah. And so I liked the fact that Chris didn't have a slide for that, but saw a need for a question and addressed it.
Yes.
So, question six, unscripted. How can we make sure we are adequately identifying and providing services for our students of color, students with disabilities, and English language learners?
Whoa. I mean, that's huge. And so in my world, and I've only got a little bit of experience in the typical brick and mortar, in my world, my students of color are, I mean, on equal playing ground as far as how I am educating them. Mm-hmm. I don't get students with disabilities per se, because that's the way our charter is written. But English language learners, I get as well. And that one hit me the hardest because, if their native language, if they don't have a test in their native language, you know, how can we make sure, you know, we conjugate, you know, our sentences differently than they do in other places. It's like... Right. Taking a test in ASL when all you know is how to sign in English. They're two different languages.
Yeah, like by hand spelling out every word or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and just the order in which, like, ASL, it's car of blue, or not blue car. Okay. So there are kids that learn to sign later in life because later in life they lose their hearing and their parents have only ever spoken English, so they sign in English. They use the actual signs, not letter spelling.
Right.
But it's speaking English the way we speak English. When you learn ASL, it's like shorthand almost. Okay. You know, don't get every word. And so if a student is Spanish speaking and they're not used to conjugating the way we conjugate our words, and am I using that right? I keep going to that word, but
I don't know if conjugate's the right word, but maybe like subject verb agreement or something like that.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. Just add that everywhere I said the other word. But how do you get a full measure of their ability if it's not written in their native tongue? And right. I get they're here and that's the predominant language used, but it's not going to adequately measure their knowledge.
Right.
Just saying.
Yeah, anyway. I mean, the thing that comes to mind with that is I took German in college and I thought it was fabulous, but it was like subject, like one or two words, subject, one or two words, verb, and then everything else after that. And so if that's how you're used to your grammar being organized, and now you're speaking English where we may throw a subject five words down the road, and who knows where your verb's going to show up, and forget about the split infinitive.
I mean, right.
Dang.
I mean, just, So, I mean, those kids are at a disadvantage. Sherry Gately said, this one's hard for me. This is, there is so much data that shows standardized tests are racially biased, yet we use those to define a student's skill set. The achievement gap has widened since No Child Left Behind. I'm not sure using a test is very adequate for our minority students. And, I mean, amen.
You know,
but that's why they're so. The first way to identify is with the test. The second way to identify, and you only get a certain percentage of your total population that's allowed to be identified by the second way, is relationships. You know, if that kid has, you know, a gifted and talented, if they're, I don't know how to, you can identify. But only a certain percentage of your total school's population can be identified that way.
Right. I mean, I remember taking psychology of the teenage brain, or, you know, some educational psychology class in college. And we were talking about IQ tests. And our professor was like, have you ever noticed, if you look at data, IQ test scores are always going up. Always. Huh. Like, if you compare IQ test scores from, say, over the last 5 years to, like, 1970,
yeah,
the IQ was going to be higher.
Okay.
And he goes, but we're looking around going, I don't think that anybody's necessarily any smarter. So what's going on there? Now, this was a long time ago, and maybe different data has come to light. But I thought, I just really kind of thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
You know.
Fascinating.
I mean, here we are doing Skype, like it's no big deal, but we had to learn how to do it. Our students know nothing but FaceTime.
Right.
I mean, you know, it's things like that. Like, are they smarter just because they can do, you know what I'm saying? Or graphing calculators for math students. I didn't have a graphing calculator in high school. I had to graph all that crap by hand.
Well, and so are we smarter because we don't have to use brain space for some of those functions that would typically have been used for, you know, graphing by hand? Right. Or
so, you know, I don't know.
Okay. Because I used to know every telephone number out there of my friends and family. I only know mine and my husband's now.
Yeah.
Because my smartphone holds everything else. Maybe my brain has room for more knowledge because my smartphone holds everything else.
Like,
maybe?
I can't tell you what my dad's cell phone number is.
I know, isn't that horrible?
I mean, so I don't know. Anyway, Joy Hoffmeister was participating in our conversation on Sunday, and she said, Oklahoma has under-identified gifted, talented minority students for decades. This must be changed. We're developing new strategies to reverse the trend and better serve all students.
Ooh, good to know. I wish I could, you know, get a hold of her or whoever is handling gifted and talented at the State Department for this chat. Maybe I will try to reach out and get a follow-up.
Oh, could have a special podcast in the works there.
Yeah.
Well, you know some folks down there, so.
Everybody does.
I don't.
You do too.
I mean, I got Joy's phone number because she gave it out at a conference to like 5,000 people. She doesn't know me. Whereas Aaron Burns would call, she'd be like, Aaron, what's going on? Come over to the house. We're having dinner. She lives in Tulsa.
Yeah, no, shut up. Anyway. question 7?
Yep.
All right. There's no need to identify gifted students at an early age, right? Keep in mind that this is about misconceptions and not my personal view. And so, like, there were people that were like, what do you mean there's no reason? Of course we need to identify early. I mean, isn't that the best strategy for any student out there? Identify early so that you can support throughout?
With whatever learning is required, whether it's gifted and talented or special needs or learning disabled or... who knows what, right? Right? Right?
Right? Right? Right? Right.
I went with Steve Gilland here. He's at Steve_Gilland. He said, if the goal is to meet students' needs, then it needs to be identified. I mean, yes. That is the answer to question 7. Thank you, Steve. Yeah. I mean.
Yeah. So Todd Gregg says, I think this goes back to purpose. Why are we doing this? Are we going to be intentional in grooming and growing their skills or not? If your only purpose in identifying gifted and talented comes for funding reasons, mm-hmm. because there are funds that come along with that, it's not a good purpose. Mm-hmm. If you're taking funds, you need to find a way to reach those students. Just saying. So, be purposeful. But, I mean, if you're going to identify it, do something with it. Don't just identify it.
I mean, I really love his second question. Are we going to be intentional?
Yeah.
You know. So, question 8 says, what are some social issues that gifted kids struggle with due to their giftedness?
Yeah.
There's probably a variety of things here because sometimes those students are so far into their own universe, life in general is a bit awkward until they can catch up with, age-wise, those people who think like they do. Having said that, I had a student one time from 8th grade take a pre-AP pre-calculus course, which was nothing but 11th and 12th graders. So he's at least 3 years younger.
Yeah.
If not 4, 5, or 6 years younger than some of the people in that room. And he was brilliant and everybody recognized it. And I just said, okay, on day one, I go, this is Raghavendra. He's in eighth grade. You be nice to him or I'll eat you. And I know Raghavendra was a little embarrassed by that. But what ended up happening though, was he's a brilliant kid. But man, he became like the kid in that class that everybody was friends with. Like he cut across all the different cliques and groups and moods and genres. Like everybody loved hanging out with Raghavendra. And he's like so much younger than them. And so I think you can find examples that can support both of these things. Are there kids that struggle? You bet. Are there kids that blend in everywhere? Yeah, you bet. Just like real life.
I have a 13-year-old student. I guess by the time next year comes around, he'll be 14, right? But he will be taking college algebra at the local community college.
Dang.
I worry a little bit about him, but I hope that he's embraced, you know, with everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, but he's Jedi kid.
Right.
Anyway.
I just think the issues you see in Jedi kids or gifted and talented kids are going to be the same issues you see in all kids. Maybe it's magnified a little bit because of where they're thinking. But if you were to set them in a situation where they're with people who thought at the same level, I don't know.
Then, yeah. Anyway. Question 8?
Yep. So what are some of those social issues that gifted kids struggle with due to their giftedness?
I think it just depends on what the giftedness is. Mm-hmm. With my little kid here, he is socially awkward. But I think that there's so much going on in his head at a single time that it's hard for him to get it out. And I'm not saying that I was gifted. I honestly do think I was mislabeled in school. But my brain moves so fast sometimes that I just stutter. And I'm sure I've done it on here before, but I cannot get the words out correctly and in the right order. And he, you know, Chris, in our long chat after the fact, was saying, yes, like that is very common. That is an issue that gifted kids have, is that they do tend to stutter because their brains just move so quickly that, you know, they're 5 words ahead of where their physical body is speaking.
And that's sort of like my youngest daughter. Oh, good heavens. Like, writing is just way too slow. Like, she cannot write as fast as her brain works. And she's a talker. She probably has, like, I don't know, 500,000 words a day. And she talks so fast that we have to ask her to repeat all the time. What did you just... And we live with her. So, like, we can ferret out the Madigan ease. But but there's times where we're like, you gotta, like, what?
What grade is she in?
She's in fourth grade.
Okay, so it's probably not going to work for the fifth grade writing test. But when Tatum has a writing assignment that I have her do, mm-hmm. I tell her to go verbally dump everything into her iPad or, you know, voice memos. And then when she goes to write it, she can listen, hit pause, and then write out what she was going to say, because she's the same way. Yeah. It is painstakingly slow, but she's already thought of 4 things to write. And then by the time she's written one, she's forgotten those things.
Mm-hmm.
So I have her go verbally dump, and then she comes back and listens to what she...
Does Tatum write so fast her handwriting is just sucky?
Her handwriting is sucky, but it's not because she is fast. Okay. She's just... Yeah, it's pretty rough.
Because I think Madigan's handwriting is terrible, and I think some of that is she just is trying to write so fast to get her thoughts out before they escape her. So, I went with Kimberly Blodgett here. She's at Kimber Blodgett. She said, I have a very gifted child in my class now. His peers struggle with ever wanting to compete against him in anything. They assume they will lose every time, and this is unfair to both children. And I think sometimes, you know, like, I have to tell my own kids, you do not have to finish first on the dang worksheet.
You know.
It's okay. but gosh darn, if there isn't groupthink going on there with, dang, Chad finished first again, I'll never be first with my worksheet. I mean, can't help it. We all have a little bit of that in us, right?
Right. Right. And finishing first does not necessarily mean anything. Like,
but we know that. But how do we how do you get a third grader to understand that?
I know. Anyway, I went with Kristen Odell on this one, and she is at Math and Sushi. She said, students who have been told that they're exceptional from an early age struggle when things get hard. They become performance avoidant. And I have seen that. I've seen that happen as well. And some of that comes from every kid gets told a little bit, you know, like, I don't know, every kid gets a trophy now. So every kid gets, I don't know.
Well, you have a situation in Oklahoma where the valedictorians get X number of dollars of college scholarship money. And so what happened? All the school districts came in and kind of reorganized how you could be a valedictorian. So now, instead of truly measuring the top performer of a student class, you'll have, like in a school like Emma Memorial, who I have very fond memories of, but disagreed with this particular aspect, you'll have 50 valedictorians and 45 salutatorians. And I am sorry, that is not right, because you can have a student who can roll through every AP course in the district.
Yeah.
Be a valedictorian with the kid that avoided the performance and just took straight up regular courses. And good job on both for
right.
for 4.0-ing all of high school. But the AP journey is significantly more difficult than a regular journey.
Is AP not weighted differently?
I don't think so.
They're not a 4.5 scale?
I don't think so.
Hmm. Okay.
I mean, you would get some upset parents.
Well, I mean, and so that...
Because you're talking college money. And because somewhere we said, all valedictorians deserve this.
We only have one valedictorian per charter in our school.
Mm-hmm.
And from what I can tell now is if you haven't taken at least 3 to 4 college classes by the time you graduate high school, you're not in the running for valedictorian.
Yeah. There's just so much emphasis on it. And it's unfortunate, because what's happening is, and that's a topic for a different podcast. I'll just I feel my vein on my head starting to come out, like, whew. So, Boom Sauce tweets, Aaron.
Yeah, I did not choose one, but you did, so give it.
Insert eye roll. Okay, now what was really fun was last week when we tweeted out our podcast, Sherry Gately listened to it, and she's like, yes, Boom Sauce tweet. Well, Sherry, you are 2 for 2. I went with you again, and she said, honestly, I feel like labeling students has always been the way American Ed created inequity in schools. It's been done forever. Maybe it's time to rethink that process.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's, I mean, it's, in my opinion, it's time to rethink many processes in education.
I think Sherry should be somebody we should invite to be on the board of the school that we start.
Sherry, please agree blindly now.
We may never see the light of day with this school, but if it does come to pass, it will be different than every other school. So there you go. There's the Boom Sauce tweet.
All right, so next week.
These tough chats, and these two chats taken together just show the breadth of what teachers have to do in the classroom.
No, I know. Listen to last week's episodes. Listen to this week's episodes. It is, I mean, it's hard, man.
Yeah.
You know, you see the meme, like, what my mom thinks I do.
Yeah,
what my,
yeah, yeah.
I invite anybody to go sit in a classroom and just give it a week. A day is not enough time. Sit for a week. See what it's like. See what they experience. It's totally different than what you think if you're not, you know. And we're probably only talking to educators. So I don't know if that's going
to
help anybody.
And that's another important thing, is we have to try and communicate this message outside of our education bubble. In any way that we can, sharing through our personal Facebook or social media pages, and not just inside of our teacher pages. We need to encourage people to truly understand what's happening in our classrooms. And I think the better we can educate John Q. Public and Jane Q. Public on what is happening in all of our classrooms, the better for all of us.
Because like you said, we've got people just in Oklahoma issue. This is happening in classrooms across the nation.
Mm-hmm.
So
there you go.
Anyway, yeah.
So
this week's Twitter chat that we're getting ready to have, the coming Twitter chat, is going to be hosted by Sean Heim.
Yep.
He is going to do our legislative update. And boy, oh boy, do I have questions, because we've just come off of a teacher walkout. We haven't been able to speak with Sean in, I think, since before the session started, like right before the session started.
Right.
And there are still bills that are up. There are things that are even sitting on the governor's desk now. I want to know what he thinks, because it affects education. And yes. I'm just really excited about getting to speak with Sean.
I think this chat will be super interesting for a variety of reasons.
Yeah,
this is like our first legislative update since all of the excitement at the Capitol.
Yeah.
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 So
that Twitter chat will be on Sunday night at 8 p.m. Okay. From 8 to 9. Join it.
Central Standard Time.
Central Standard Time, exactly. Thank you.
Be there. Be square.
Yeah.
Don't be a square.
Don't be a trapezoid, though.
Oh, they lean funny.
All right.
All right.
All right, educators. You know what to do. Go out and dominate the world.
Didn't he
dominate? Dominate it like you're eating a cheese and pepperoni pizza.
Oh, I would dominate that.
Yeah.
I didn't say it.
Aaron, rat sacking son of a hoochie.
We're only saying you're doing fine, Oklahoma, Oklahoma. Okay.